users will not choose better protocols. They will only choose better experiences. And this isn't just about, you know, cross-chain exchanges. It's about everything. It's a frequent issue I have when I'm talking about people with Monero and privacy. If users are even in the slightest bit bothered, they will simply not care and go back to Bitcoin where everyone can see what their transactions are.
This podcast is sponsored by CoinATM Radar. When buying crypto with cash, an ATM is much more reliable and safer than meeting some random person in a random place. And unlike an exchange, which could freeze your account, you truly own all the crypto you buy. With CoinATM Radar, you could find crypto ATMs and other services where you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies for cash. On their website, you can search by coin, address, if the ATM supports selling as well as buying, and you can also search by geo area, country, state, city. You can also check and compare actual current fees at different ATMs. If you want to find out more, head over to coinatmradar.com, which is CoinATMRadar.com. Hey everyone, I have the fantastic pleasure of interviewing the one and only Luke Parker, at least the only one I know of. How's it going, man?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Been very busy this week, but definitely worth making time for this discussion because I've been very personally very curious about the cross-chain space. I've been a multi-coiner of sorts for many years since the early, I guess, CeFi Shapeshift days. Huge user of Shapeshift back in the day. And then when ThorChain burst onto the ChaosNet age, I started really using that since the ChaosNet days. That got into the Maya protocol, and then I, you know, have been made aware of Chainflip. I haven't gotten the chance to use them, but then I know Sarai was always something that was sort of mentioned in the background. So I really figured like this is a conversation we really need to have and get promoted. So why don't you just introduce yourself and how you got into crypto?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Luke Parker. I'm also known as Kayaba. Or Kayaba Nerve online. I got into crypto when I was 15 or so at the time, trying to do jobs over the internet, just do some basic coding, you know, like writing scripts on Fiverr and so on. And it was both really difficult to find jobs and really difficult to get paid for my jobs. Because it's like, oh, make a PayPal. My PayPal was closed. I was under 18 at the time.
Yeah.
And then I found this one project and they're like, oh yeah, we'll just send you some of our token, which you can swap for Ether. And we'll give you $600 if you write this code. And I looked into it and it's like, oh my gosh, Newegg supports this. I can get computer parts with this magic internet number in front of me.
Fantastic.
And that's really what set me down into cryptocurrency. It was actually the currency part of it, just the fact that it was a functional, quick, and easy way for me to send and receive money. And it's that for me to this day. Every time I want to pay someone, I'm like, please don't make me call my bank. I am going to have to download a PDF. I'm going to have to fill it out. And at some random time over the next 24 to 48 hours, they may or may not give me a call to confirm. And if I don't pick up then and there, it's going to be delayed. Please do not make me do a wire transfer. Can I just send you some USDC or Ether or something? So to this day, I really appreciate the currency part of cryptocurrency, but I also will appreciate the crypto part of it, the fact that it's this verifiable and trustless system. So I've kind of come full circle on crypto and currency.
Yeah, well, it sounds, you know, very aligned with the space. Mm-hmm. And it's something that... I think it's one of those early things where for people need like a reason to really care about this a lot of times. And that reason is just being completely excluded from the financial system in this case. Mm-hmm. And eventually for people who use crypto for daily payments of any kind or regular payments, it's just hard to go back after that. It's hard to like not see the value. And so that takes us to Sarai, right? Mm-hmm. So we have... ThorChain kind of came out as the big cross-chain AMM DEX that just basically offered more or less that simple Shapeshift style experience, old school Shapeshift style experience. If you click, you have one coin, you get another one. And it used to be an Ethereum thing that with Uniswap and stuff, you could do that with tokens, but only in that closed ecosystem. So Thorchain did that. Thorchain's the big one. I was interviewing Chad a few years ago, and he offhandedly mentioned some friendly fork called the Maya protocol. I'm like, wait, there's more? And so I just jump and chase after that. And then, so I start to hear rumors of Sarai. And one thing I noticed in particular is for the longest time, the Thorchain community or leadership or whatever you want to call it, seemed to have like a hot and cold relationship with Monero in particular. Basically privacy enhancing anything, but specifically Monero. And it seemed like both the hottest commodity and the least desired asset at the same time, in a weird sort of a way, from an external perspective at least. Who knows what's actually going on behind the scene. But then at some point, that will you or won't you kind of thing seems to have just given way to it'll happen on Sarai. So would you mind giving a quick breakdown of Sarai and how you decided to arrive at going into that?
Sure. So a few years ago, probably about 4 years ago, I was working on my own cryptocurrency, and something I try to say every single time this comes up, I did not accept donations from it. There was no ICO, there was no IEO, there was no presale. So there was no financial involvement other than the time and money I put into it myself. So it did end up not launching. I did end up walking away from it, but it's not like, oh yeah, we raised 10 million and I got a villa, but oh guys, sorry, the project failed. We're shutting it down.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot. Yeah, it was a development effort, but I explicitly didn't even take donations because I understood it may not come together. And if it came together, I didn't want to disappoint people or have people, quote unquote, on the line regarding their finances. But as part of that, I always felt it really important that no matter what, a decentralized exchange of it could take place. So at the time, that meant doing atomic swaps. And I was just like, no matter what, we need to support atomic swaps with this. I don't want to add full programmability like Ethereum. I don't want to add partial programmability like Bitcoin. But no matter what, it needs to support atomic swaps. Mm-hmm. Because that way, everyone can at least get in and out of it. It was just this really like basic requirement, I thought, for cryptocurrency. And this protocol floated across my screen. And it was for atomic swaps between a non-programmable cryptocurrency and a programmable cryptocurrency. And this was innovative because prior papers were between programmable and programmable cryptocurrencies. Not necessarily fully programmable like Ethereum, but at least like Bitcoin or similar. So it was, I believe, it was initially proposed for Monero. I saw it in the Nano cryptocurrency shadow of all things, and I ended up implementing it for my own project. I implemented it with another developer who at the time was interested in Nano. So we did the initial integration in a very modular way. We did it for my project, then they did the Nano integration. And a few days later, I did the Monero integration because this protocol was originally posited for Monero. And I'm like, least I can do is include them in it. So that's what really got me interested in starting to develop these cross-chain decentralized exchanges. And after my project wound down, I really wanted my next thing to be a decentralized exchange. I just really loved atomic swaps. And I really wanted to allow people to enter and exit ecosystems in that way. And that was actually kind of my original plan. Like, I didn't believe at the time in Thorchain's model. I was unhappy with various aspects, and I was thinking that things should be pure. It should just be you and the other person. There should be no middleman, et cetera, and et cetera. And the reason I ended up coming around is part of a larger belief I have now, but users will not choose better protocols, they will only choose better experiences. And this isn't just about, cross-chain exchanges, it's about everything. It's a frequent issue I have when I'm talking about people with Monero and privacy. It doesn't matter if Monero is the most private cryptocurrency out there, because the moment someone has oh, well, you need to back up your view key and you can never give this anywhere. And when you send, you have to solve 10 minutes of math puzzles and please wait 5 minutes for proofs to generate. Obviously, this is an over-exaggerated view of Monero. I actually quite like the Monero wallet experience these days, but it doesn't matter if you have this perfect privacy protocol. If users are even in the slightest bit bothered, they will simply not care and go back to Bitcoin where everyone can see what their transactions are. So Monero, with regards to privacy, has made great strengths on this, and I actually do like the modern Monero wallet experience. But as that commentary applies to privacy, it also applies to cross-chain decentralized exchanges, in that if users have to wait half an hour for their exchange to complete, as they might with atomic swaps, then they're not going to come back to your exchange platform. The benefit of this over-collateralized multisig design is that users simply send a transaction, and half an hour to an hour later, they can expect the corresponding transaction to have been sent. And it just offers a dead simple user experience that users actually want. So even if I personally appreciate the protocol behind atomic swaps, the how trustless it is, how many security guarantees you get, I could build an amazing atomic swap platform and users wouldn't care. So I decided to make the compromise, build something users would actually go to, but it's still miles better than centralized solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that it's the ultimate dance with the crypto world of like, do you run your own node? Do you run it over Tor? Do you, you know, make sure to with the Bitcoin world, right? Have proper UTXO management to make sure stuff doesn't worry. And then what about your OPSEC? Do you run everything on Linux? Do you have graphene on your device, like your mobile device? Do you like, there's so many levels of how nerdy this stuff can get for people who love it, right? But then the average person just needs to work, and having that option is kind of definitely there. And so I do know like atomic exchanges have been around for quite a while in crypto. They're nothing new, and I never really remember them taking off in a serious amount, and it's like serious volume. So it does kind of support what you're saying about they just want it to just work, and they hit a button, coin goes in, other coin goes out, kind of works. So that basically led to your interest in pursuing a Sarai model, right? After the Thor chain model. So is it kind of, I guess, fair or accurate to say that you decided to pursue this project as a whole just to make sure that some coins like Monero had a experience on an exchange like this? Or is it a little bit more nuanced than that?
Yeah, so Monero is a very notable reason I moved forward with this. When I first started Sarai, it actually wasn't when the Haven integration, when it came to the Monero integration, there were actually two different attempts at integrating Monero into either Thorchain or a fork of Thorchain. There was the originally proposed integration that was a work in progress by the Haven team, which technically was not an integration for Monero, it was an integration for Haven, their fork of Monero. But with it, it would have set the precedent and, you know, done all of the development on what is effectively a Monero integration. So would have been an easy transition from it being a Haven integration to it being a Monero integration. At the time, the Haven integration wasn't even canceled yet. It was still an active discussion. I think it had just reached the phase where the Haven team was announcing that they had it running on their internal testnet. And that's roughly when I actually started work on Sarai, because I did review the Haven integration at the time. I saw issues with it. I actually kind of let a few people know of the issues I saw at the time. And I thought I could build a better integration. So that's kind of where Sarai started out. The obvious question would be, well, if you just believed you could do a better integration, why not do that with Thorchain? There are many design decisions I personally disagree with in Thorchain. So for me to go through all of this effort, I wanted it to be for a platform I could unilaterally recommend and not have any hesitations about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, that's kind of why I started my own project, which has made several different design decisions. But also has taken much longer to develop.
Yeah, of course. Real quick, would you mind kind of going over some of those design differences? It's been one thing that I'm most familiar with the Maya protocol, and they seem to have done very many things very similar to Thorchain, but a few tweaks, such as the liquidity model and the coin issuance model being like a really big one, and some other things like that. So what are the let's just start with the Thorchain template, like the boilerplate. This is what we're starting with. How is Sarai meaningfully different? What design differences are there?
Yeah, so quite a few things. We can start as simple as economics. Thorchain obviously launched their token before they launched their chain. They started out with, I believe, a 1 billion supply, then they ended up burning half of it to 500 million. I believe of that 500 million, they had, various allocations for the team, investors, certain initiatives, so on and so on. And then if we move over to what Maya did, Maya actually did a fair launch of Kakao, yet there's additionally a Maya token which earns fee revenue. And that, I'm not entirely sure the exact distribution of, but I believe the team has a notable percentage of it. And their argument for that is, yeah, the team built this, and if it becomes a successful platform, only then does the team get rewarded. I actually can respect the ideas there. For Sarai, it's a fair launch entirely, not just for the Sarai coin, yet we don't have a second coin that's been pre-mined. At every chance to remove centralized actors, we have. So there's no token available ahead of time, there's no pre-mine, there's no dev tax, there's no dev fund, there's no pre-sale, IO, ICO, et cetera. So just that simple premise already changes quite a bit. The next one is going to be how our token is initially, or how our coin is initially distributed. It's a bit complicated to explain briefly, but I'll try my best. We are using symmetric liquidity like Thorchain, with regards to the fundamental underlying liquidity pool. It's symmetric liquidity. You have to add both, say Bitcoin and Sarai. It's not concentrated liquidity like Chainflip is. So obviously when the network launches, if no one received any Sarai, there's no pre-mine, there's no sale, no one can add liquidity because they don't have Sarai to add liquidity with. So our solution is for the first month, that's the current proposal, anyone will just be able to add Bitcoin. And the Sarai portion of that will be airdropped at the end of the month, and this will form our Genesis liquidity. Sort of similar to Maya in that regard, with one distinction being it's actually not locked up. Users are able to remove their liquidity at any time. But if they remove their liquidity, they don't get the airdrop Sarai portion. They only get the initial Bitcoin they added and whatever has been earned on top of that. So that is partnered with another mechanism where now that we have launched our liquidity pools, the obvious goal is to become economically secure. We have validators who have actually staked enough Sarai that we can say the protocol is economically secure. And one solution for that would be for whoever are the validators at the start of the network at Genesis. Yeah, we can just print them a bunch of Sarai and give them, 60% of the total supply as needed to economically secure it and say, that's fine and call it a day. Yes, I do not want to give 10 of my friends 60% of the supply.
Yeah, of
So the
course.
next, right, so the next question is like, how do we make it a fair, decentralized process anyone can participate in? So the idea there was anyone would be able to send Bitcoin into the protocol, and that would mint new Sarai for them to use as stake. The reason for this is they could swap to their Sarai, which they use as stake. That just really messes with the ratios in the pool. Just to try to use my hands a bit, hopefully this goes
Yeah,
well.
of course.
If we have this much Bitcoin and this much Sarai in the pool, if a user swaps in Bitcoin for Sarai, that adds some Bitcoin and takes out Sarai. So when we're discussing, moving 60% of the total Sarai supply into the validator stake. We're not just discussing, here's the starting phase, here's the end of it. We're discussing this massive shift in the pool ratio. And the question is, how do we minimize how massive that is? Because it's really not the best footing to start the protocol on, just this, you know, exponential rise up. Because it's good on the rise up, it's less good on the way back down. So we came up with the idea, what if instead of validators getting their stake from the pools, they just get their stake from freshly minted Sarai, because that will have less of an impact on price and provide us with much better footing. So they send Bitcoin into the protocol. The protocol mints Sarai, and that Sarai is what is used for their stake. And now the protocol has this extra bit of Bitcoin laying around. The plan for that is actually to form protocol-owned liquidity. So if we have, you know, here's the pool and we have some Bitcoin, the protocol will take some of that Bitcoin and swap out a bit of Sarai, and then it will add that Sarai back as liquidity with the rest of the Bitcoin. So the Sarai amount in the pool remains the same, but we've increased the Bitcoin. So technically, yes, the Sarai price has gone up a bit, but notably, the protocol has formed protocol-owned liquidity, and all of the existing LPs actually are bought out of their Sarai as this protocol-owned liquidity forms, because we're actually swapping in Bitcoin for their Sarai. So it has a few very interesting effects, from technically making Genesis LPs short Sarai. You know, if the protocol never reaches economic security, their LP positions don't change. But as the protocol does move towards economic security, the amount of, you know, Bitcoin, Ether, DAI, Monero in their positions would be expected to go up. While also making large swaps of liquidity protocol owned, because we're looking to have, you know, 60% or so of the total supply be staked to validators, we'd be looking at a very similar percentage of liquidity becoming protocol owned. Under ideal circumstances, of course. Mm-hmm. So yeah, economics are vastly different in that sense, from distribution to protocol, the focus on protocol owned liquidity. And then there's also just a bunch of other things, but I think that's a good first step in how we're different.
Yeah, that's the first kind of big structured thing. Now, are nodes going to be fully Sarai bonded, or are they LP bonded, kind of like Maya does it?
They're going to be fully SRI bonded. There's a lot of technical commentary on why you cannot have liquidity be used as stake. And if you successfully bound it, if you successfully limit it and apply these very specific rules, then yes, it works out. But I would not phrase it as bonding at liquidity is secure to this specific threshold. I would say bonding liquidity to this specific threshold satisfies these other economic conditions, and these other economic conditions are what enable you to. It's a whole commentary piece. I don't want to get into it right now. But nonetheless, we're solely doing SRI as stake.
Yeah, very nice. And so, what's the sort of developer funding model for this? And obviously, that's more of a 2024 question than like a 2013 question, right? Because back in the day, everyone's like, oh, I just launched my proof of work coin from scratch. And, you know, there's no founder's reward, no nothing. And, you know, we'll get donations for development or whatever. And then I'm sure plenty of people pretending to do that and actually doing something different. These days, it seems like every project and their brother is launching with like 30% VC, whatever, all that kind of stuff. So that's where the sort of context comes from. This is standard today. Standard, almost everyone has a big allocation for the people building this. And obviously, that's not the way you decided to go. So which way did you decide to go? How are you going to pay the bills and keep either personally developing this, or hire other people to do that, or other people, or encourage other people to do it?
So, personally, I've been developing Sarai for, I believe, over 2 years now. I'm not independently wealthy, as in, you know, I wasn't born to parents in the Manhattan Upper East Side. No. Earlier I talked about how I first got into cryptocurrency because as a teenager, I was trying to find work as a developer, and how I could spend the $600 I earned on computer parts. That was actually the first PC I built. It was $600. So it's not like I didn't have a computer as a kid. But my parents weren't the type to, you know, go out and buy me these large gaming machines and sponsor my development. And also, oh yeah, you can use our second house to live. No, I've been lucky enough though, thanks to cryptocurrency as an industry, to independently fund my lifestyle. I personally work as a security researcher. And the really great thing about working as a security researcher is that if you're good and or lucky enough at it, I'll caveat that. There's probably some element of luck to it. If you're good and or lucky enough, you can just put in, you know, a very small amount of work for a very large amount of time to live and not be bothered by money. And you can see this where if you go on Immunify, the top bounty right now, the top bug bounty, if you find a critical bug, they'll pay you this much, is $15 million.
Yeah.
You know, if it takes you 3 months to review a code base in its entirety for the project we're discussing, and you do happen to find something that would be the luck and or skill factor, you get $15 million for 3 months of work. I think that $15 million might set you up for life. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
The money printers are going these days, but thankfully we have better storage value than fiat.
Yeah. So thankfully work as a security researcher can be quite lucrative, and I have been able to take that for myself and choose what I want to spend my time on. I can choose to spend my time developing Sarai. I can choose to spend my time contributing to Monero. I can choose to spend my time picking up unrelated development contracts. Some of my work is security research. Sometimes I do actually seek funding for the work I do on other projects. But thankfully, I've personally been able to contribute to Sarai. And not only that, I've contracted one other developer who does work on Sarai. And then I've occasionally contracted a Monero developer to help with the Monero side of things as appropriate. They actually did a lot of polishing off on our, quote, Monero Sarai library. It's literally that, Monero-Sarai. It's a general-purpose Monero library we built in order to integrate Monero. But it's not exclusive to Sarai. It is actually meant to be a public good for the Monero ecosystem and something anyone can you know, integrate Monero into their product or service with. So, yep, I've contracted them to help out there because there's a lot of details to it, and it would be great to not get any of them wrong. I've been able to not only manage my own lifestyle, but to bring on a couple of other developers and also pay for audits. So I don't personally plan to change that soon, but obviously if we're discussing, you know, 10 to 20 years out, me personally paying for everything is not the most sustainable model. It definitely follows the old cypherpunk ethos of what's a pre-mine, just ship your thing, just put your code out there, deploy the project at the end. What I'd hope to see develop is a donation-based system actually similar to the one Monero currently has. Monero does have a community crowdfunding system where anyone who wants to get paid for their work on Monero can submit a request for funding, say the work they want to do, and then anyone can send them funding for it. And with the CCS, it's held in escrow by a few trusted community members. And then as milestones are completed, they're paid out. So I'd love to see something similar developed for Sarai. There's other funding platforms within the Monero ecosystem, which are more just donation-based. There's no this escrow middleman. Love to see some of those set up for Sarai. And I'm hopeful enough people like the project, believe in the project, or have enough financial stake in the project that they'd be willing to put in the time and or money. And then I do personally believe I'll likely start accepting donations after the project launches. I just don't want to do so beforehand because I don't really like accepting money for things that aren't complete, you know? And I do plan to complete Sarai. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't. But, you know, I could step out on the street tomorrow and, oh no, car accident. And I don't want to have taken people's money if that's what's going to happen. So until it's done for certain, which means it's actually done, I don't want to take any money for it.
Yeah, it's so you know how Thorchain and I think Maya as well have a system where you have I guess affiliate revenue or whatever when you do a swap, some of it goes to
Oh,
the interface.
yes.
So maybe that's always an idea of like maybe obviously with it's voluntary, right? But you could encourage a lot of main Sarai interfaces to maybe have something to for developers or something like that. That could always be an interesting thing.
Yeah, we do plan to have an affiliate fee on swaps, and if UIs are noting, hey, this is a very profitable integration for us, and they do want to, share the love. Yeah, I'd be happy for them to do it.
Yeah. And another thing, when you mentioned the donation thing, reminds me of the flip starter idea of Bitcoin Cash, where it's a similar like per project crowdfunding, but also has a automatic refund mechanism if the threshold isn't reached by a certain time. And
Oh,
so
nice.
it's kind of like, the crowdfund plus that little bit of less, okay, I donated like a bunch of money, but no one else did, and the project can't get going, and I still lost my money kind of thing.
There's definitely a lot of projects which have had similar systems. I mean, you can even point to Dash, which enshrined their development work funding via, anyone being able to make a proposal to receive part of the block reward. Or rather, a specific amount from the block award. I won't claim to be fully up to date on Dash's, master node governance, but to say that yes, Dash enshrined this DAO into their protocol, which can issue funding. And I did actually consider a DAO within Sarai itself, because that would still be, decentralized and not just here's my address, it gets 20% of the block reward. But unfortunately, DAOs are not only highly debatable already, there's a lot of people who love them, a lot of people who hate them, yet there's definitely regulatory scrutiny tightening down on them. So
Yeah, for
between
sure.
how debatable they already are, between how complicated it would be to implement, because bad implementations are really easy to implement, good ones are harder.
Yeah.
I just decided to kind of wash my hands of that idea and say it's best to leave it out.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's there's a million ways of doing something like this, and that's kind of just a second that's maybe a secondary part is like how do you get funding to keep on developing rather than the core product, which is sort of the real thing. So like I assume it works the same. There's a lot of similar features that will be kind of in the rest of the cross-chain ecosystem about provide liquidity, you get fees for liquidity provision. What about other products like the savers functionality that Thorchain has and other kinds of bells and whistles other than just swapping? Is that something that's a focus or not?
We definitely have bells and whistles compared to Thorchain, but compared to just swapping, that one I'm not sure about. Personally, this has actually been over Twitter for like the past couple of weeks. It may be at its kind of boiling point in this drama cycle about
What's
Thorchain's
Twitter's fault?
lending risk and will it go to zero? Is it the next Terra Luna? I think even like 1 or 2 days ago, the Thorchain Twitter account tweeted I want to say letter, it was in a letter format. I believe they tweeted an image of a document just to get a very long tweet out there. I'd have to double check. But they wanted to clarify how the lending mechanism works and how it is both. Yes, it is Terra Luna, but no, it's not the DEF that fell Terra Luna. Personally, I don't believe in the algorithmic model, just to give a very summary statement of it. I am not here to run away and say, Thorchain, I'm not here to shout, oh, Thorchain, you'll definitely lose all of your money. It's going to death spiral. But I believe it works until it doesn't. There are a bunch of attempts at this from smaller projects to Titan to even Terra Luna, which got to, I believe, the top 10 of all cryptocurrencies by market cap, and it worked so well until it collapsed. So there may be a system of bounds that reasonably prevent it from so spiraling, and Thorchain may have found that series of bounds yet it's not something I want to introduce into Sarai and not something I'd ever advocate for. I think what we would be much more interested in is anything from infrastructural improvements, such as, you know, concentrated liquidity, order books, more decentralized ways of scaling. And that would be, you know, in the future, of course. I'm not promising any new features now. We have to launch first. Also much more bounded offerings. One consideration has been for Aave-style loans. Mm-hmm. And you can say it's not exclusively Aave. You can also say it's Compound. You can also say it's, to some extent, Maker. But regardless, the idea that, yes, we establish price oracles over our coins, and then we let anyone lend out their collateral and also take loans on their collateral. So, like, that could be one way that we're looking to expand, but I don't believe we would do so in an algorithmic fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And the algo stuff, I never looked too closely into Luna, like Semi, and I mm-hmm. did have some just to play around with it. And then I remember going mm-hmm. to zero. I got like 20 cents on the dollar out of UST, but
that sounds better than most people.
That's better than most people, and it was not a significant holding at all. It was just a playing around. So I'm not crying, yeah. You know, buyer beware. I'm not. I got scammed in rug pull. Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed. And to be fair, before the collapse, the last few weeks on my weekly news show, I did mention this thing seems sketchy. And it might be ready to go. So if I didn't heed my own warnings, it's my own fault, right? But yeah, I get that. The algo thing is very tricky because you're trying to basically peg the value of an asset, which, you know, all values believe. Human beings decide what they mm-hmm. think is valuable or not. Trying to peg it in a certain way, in a certain sort of automated way, and just hope that that works out. It's like there's so much. It's so difficult. I think it's probably one of the most difficult things is to have a fully foolproof algorithmic value, you know.
To give credit to Thorchain the protocol, they can't Death Spiral because they limit their coin's total supply to 500 million, mm-hmm. which means no matter what, their supply can't go higher than 500 million with whatever effects that has. So they're not going to be, you know, oh, here's your 1 trillion rune. It's worth 2 cents. Would you like any more? No, that can't happen because of this limit on the supply. So the death spiral for Thorchain isn't, you know, their supply goes ad infinitum. The concerns of an event that we might call a collapse would be, one, the supply hits 500 million. But 2, if the supply hits 500 million, I believe it actually prevents redemption of all outstanding loans. Mm. So there's no liquidation, yet also they're not necessarily repayable, from my understanding. And that's both a benefit to the protocol, but it doesn't change. There is still significant risk, despite this hard bound of a 500 million supply, and that there is also risk to the users. And those are all things I want to be very careful and mindful about. And if that makes, you know, Thorchain the, despite being the older protocol, if that makes them the faster moving one or the more innovative one, I'm fully fine leaving them to that, while I would like a protocol that's very steady about how it works and operates.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously I was using Thorchain during the Chaos Net days, and mm-hmm. I started to LP some Ethereum right mm-hmm. when Ethereum got shut down for 3 months on Thorchain, mm-hmm. and that was right when Ethereum had a massive run up rune. So, you know, I've had my own share of like burns from this whole thing, but mm-hmm. that was Chaos Net. Then we got Mainnet, then we got Mainnet plus Maya, now we got plus Chainflip, and soon enough plus Sarai, and who knows if there's going to be another one after. So the risk of the ecosystem risk of Thorchain having a serious problem is now much less, in my opinion, because we have all the other entities out there that are swapping things. Of course, it's not going to be good, mm-hmm. but whatever. So on that thing, where do you see the cross-chain space kind of going more generally from here? So obviously Thorchain came out with like the boilerplate, you know, the big offering, the whatever, integrated initial beta chains, and then started becoming aggressive with features. Now they become very timid, and this is, you know, a lot of communities have gotten sort of burned by this, maybe very timid in adding new chains and not timid in adding new features. And then you've got the Maya protocol, which sort of follows up a lot of what Thorchain does in terms of the tech and the features, but has become much more aggressive with chains, with adding different chains. Just like, sure, we'll add a bunch. And so Chainflip, I'm sure, has got their own strategy. I'm not exactly sure what that is. And so where do you, first off, I guess, let me preface that. First, what's Sarai's chain addition strategy? Is it going to be, you know, which chains are you starting out with? And then what are the thoughts on in as far as the future?
Something I'd really love to hone in on actually is more of the technical details of this. Sarai isolates each of its networks. Not in that they're isolated from market effects. Obviously, they all have, you know, pools on the Sarai execution layer, and they're, all of those pools are against Sarai. But we can actually have several different networks with completely independent sets of validators for them. And this actually does require working with the economics a bit. If you just do that and walk away, you actually open yourself up to some really critical attacks. So it requires a lot of being mindful, but if you do it properly, it means that we can add new chains without burdening any of the existing validators and without creating a setup that is so complex you need a data center to run it. Okay. You know, like this is one of the recent discussions with Thorchain and integrating Solana. As it is with anyone who wants to consider integrating Solana.
Of course.
It's an incredibly heavy node. It takes a lot of resources, and in all of those ecosystems, in Thorchain and Maya and in Chainflip, the expectation is somehow everyone independently sources a full RPC for it. But Chainflip is a bit different. They don't actually explicitly expect validators to run their own nodes. They just expect validators to provide RPC endpoints. So with Chainflip, validators are actually explicitly allowed just to sign up for an Infura or QuickNodes account and go with that. I don't personally appreciate the security of that, but regardless, that's how Chainflip, one of the ways Chainflip is managing this and reducing resource requirements by allowing validators to outsource their RPCs entirely. But with Thorchain and Maya, the expectation is that every validator starts running a Solana node at home, and that is quite resource intensive for every existing validator. Technically, Thorchain is considering outsourcing their RPCs due to this exact consideration. So Thorchain would be adopting the Chainflip style, but that would be novel for Thorchain to do. If Thorchain decides to go through with that, it would be novel to their past integrations, and it would be the first usage of this new security assumption within the Thorchain ecosystem. With Sarai, it's different in that instead of requiring everyone to run a Solana node at home, we only have to ask who here is willing to run a Solana node at home. And that might be, you know, people who are staking on Thorchain, staking on Sarai, also staking on Solana, and they just already have a Solana node ready to go. Or it could be people who are willing just to independently set up Solana nodes. But regardless, we can actually completely isolate those validators in what nodes they run and how they achieve consensus over the data they're staring at, over how they produce signatures and so on. And this really lets us decentralize quite quickly. With Thorchain, I believe their validator limit is 120 right now. Maya, I'm not sure if Maya copied that or did some tweaks. I believe Chainflip is looking at 150 validators. Sarai is looking at 150 validators per network. So at launch, we could actually have up to 600 validators, and with every new network is yet another. So it really changes the difficulty and risk in doing new integrations. So we are looking to take advantage of that to very aggressively extend what networks we support in the future.
Yeah, interesting. So, I mean, obviously it doesn't construe promises or anything, but are there any ideas of, like, if you had your way, what are some cool ones you'd like to have on there?
So I'm not confirming any integrations until after launch, and I appreciate you saying no promises because I'm not going to give any promises. My stance has been that we have to launch and not increase our scope before launch. Mm-hmm. What we launch should be a quality product. I'm not for quality service, depending on how you view it. I personally don't aspire to have, you know, Chaos Net or Mainnet Beta or what did Tezos call it there? Did Tezos use the term beta net? I forget, but
I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
When we release Mainnet, I do want it to be the Mainnet. So there's a lot of moving pieces there, and they all have to be done properly. And with that, I don't want to take on more of a burden, or even agree to be taking on more burdens. We've had the common suggestions, you know, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, some chains that are a bit quicker and cheaper than Bitcoin and Ethereum are right now. Cosmos is a very large ecosystem, so I think it's kind of obvious we would want to get something in the Cosmos ecosystem. Polkadot is also its own notable ecosystem, and it's quite distinct from Ethereum and Cosmos. With Cosmos, everyone's deploying a new chain because that's the premise. Anyone can deploy a chain and move on, and they're all networking with each other, and then they are also networking with Ethereum. I believe Nomic is trying to integrate Bitcoin into the Cosmos. Polkadot's distinct in that you can launch your own chain, but you have to pay a fee for it on the Polkadot blockchain itself. So Polkadot has this entire ecosystem of blockchains, yet they're all much more interconnected and less free form. So while there have been attempts at integrating, you know, Polkadot with Cosmos, Polkadot with Ethereum, there is a Polkadot and Bitcoin service. Polkadot has been, I'll go with, underserved by the ecosystem at large. And I would think Polkadot would also be a notable target, just like the entire Cosmos ecosystem would be. Personally, and this is my personal thoughts, I just really like privacy. I just really like good coins doing good things. Yeah. So if I don't want Sarai to be exclusive to privacy coins, but yes, if you say, oh, by the way, our coin is fully private, I will be more eager to move forward with it. So there's been a few privacy coins. I keep in touch with the Haven team, who originally tried to get integrated onto Thorchain. When that didn't work out with Thorchain, but Sarai moved forward and said it was going to do Monero. Obviously, that was a natural conversation to start. Firo is a privacy coin from way back in the day. It used to be Zcoin, if you know them as that instead. So Firo recently launched a new privacy protocol I quite respect. Zcash with the latest update has removed the trusted setup and just does a really nice privacy protocol. So I respect their work as well. And all of these coins, I kind of, again, think are underserved by our ecosystem. So it's really going to be about who makes sense for us to reach out to, who has quality technology or large communities, but is underfulfilled at this time. And how can we make things better?
Yeah. I mean, that sounds perfect. And it's a Thorchain, obviously.
Building bridges.
Yes. Thorchain obviously had, started things off and had their own spate. And then obviously the next series of chains of protocols start to look into alternative chains, filling the gaps in. And now we have quite the wide ecosystem. Now, have you thought of doing liquidity pools for the native tokens of some of these other exchanges, like say Rune or Kakao or something like that?
Right. Yeah, because that's all the end goal is, you know, if Maya supports Arbitrum and no one else supports Arbitrum, well, you can do a Monero to Sarai to Kakao to Arbitrum swap, or rather, you know, Ether on Arbitrum. Mm-hmm. So Chainflip would be one option for us. Just because the technology is already, let's go with compatible. There are different signatures that different blockchain protocols use. As of this time, ThorChain only generates ECDSA signatures. They're currently auditing their ability to generate ED25519 signatures. When Sarai launches, it will only be able to produce Schnorr signatures and Schnorr-like signatures. So Monero doesn't use Schnorr signatures, but it uses a signature, I'd argue, reducible to Schnorr. And because it's reducible, it's basically the same thing. It's not, but let's claim that. Because yeah, it's basically the same thing, we can just move forward with the Schnorr signature side of things. So that's kind of the biggest hurdle for these integrations. Both ThorChain and Maya use ECDSA signatures and can generate ECDSA signatures. But Chainflip uses Schnorr signatures over an elliptic curve known as Ristretto. And then Sarai will also internally use Schnorr signatures over an elliptic curve, Ristretto. And then both Chainflip and Sarai produce Schnorr signatures. So for us to immediately try to integrate Maya or ThorChain, we can't exactly talk to each other. Mm-hmm. We can send them Schnorr signatures and they can be like, what the hell is this? We don't know what this is. Come back with a signature we support. Mm-hmm. So I've actually talked about this a bit with the Maya folks, about either them adding support for Schnorr signatures, about Sarai adding support for ECDSA signatures. I've actually made personal efforts on researching ECDSA protocols and even creating new ones which are sufficiently performant. I'm trying to write a paper on that now. And then there was actually one other option for Sarai and Maya not to integrate with them adding Schnorr signature support or us adding ECDSA signature support, but for us to use IBC to connect to each other. So I won't claim that there's any, you know, definite ideas here, any plans moving forward, but yeah, it actually is something I've considered, and I've talked a decent bit with the folks over at Maya, and it's something I'd love to see in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Now, do you think this curl cross-chain space is going to start to obsolete maybe the centralized exchange world, or do you think that maybe that's a little too premature to start hoping about that kind of stuff?
Obsolete the decentralized exchange world?
Or the centralized exchange world, like the Coinbase.
Sorry, I may have misheard you there.
All that kind of stuff.
I mean, I can obviously dream for a future where there's not some one dude laying around in their apartment who can suddenly decide, my life would be better if I stole $100 million of Bitcoin today. Yeah, that would be great if there was no one in that position. Mm-hmm. And decentralized exchanges did completely replace centralized exchanges. I'm not sure it will ever happen. The main reasons why I would point to, you know, fiat off and on ramps. It's not that there aren't solutions for fiat off and on ramps. You know, Bisc, if you're in the Monero ecosystem, Haveno is launching soon. What was local Bitcoins before was shut down. Local Monero, I think Paxful was a thing. And then I think they stopped supporting Ethereum after insulting it. And then I think they went bankrupt like 3 months later and shut down. I have to get back to you on that one. It's a really ridiculous story now that I think about it. Regardless, it's not that there aren't peer-to-peer fiat on and off ramps, because obviously, you know, ThorChain and AMM does not have a bank account and cannot do a wire transfer out to you. But I think the fact that there are centralized exchanges, and that one of the main reasons for centralized exchanges originally was to build past these peer-to-peer systems, shows that they're at least probably going to stick around for fiat on and off ramps. And if a user already signs up for a centralized exchange and is already using it to move USD on and off, I think they'll also probably still offer crypto to cryptocurrency swaps, because why should this user get their own wallet and learn what a private key is and write down their seed and learn how to use ThorChain when they can just make a few more clicks on the website they're already using? So I don't see centralized exchanges disappearing anytime soon. Even with the adoptance of cross-chain decentralized exchanges, there is a wider chance that centralized exchanges integrate with cross-chain decentralized exchanges. I know that's a future ThorChain likes to promote, but between the latency of that and I don't think a centralized exchange would ever actually do that. That's more something an OTC desk does. You know, if a centralized exchange is on operating honestly, they don't need to buy back coins they're missing. You know, it doesn't matter what their order books are doing. They have all of these coins in reserves. And if they're being honest about it, they're not touching them. So they don't need to do any swaps with them themselves. So no, I think centralized exchanges will stick around, but I'm very hopeful that decentralized exchanges can provide a lot of safety and take a lot of the responsibility for people who use cryptocurrency more and more.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, this has been quite the enlightening chat. Where can people find out more about you and follow Sarai's progress, I should say?
Yeah, Sarai.exchange is our website. It has links to, you know, GitHub, Discord, Twitter, Matrix, all of the good stuff. Actually, just before coming to record this, I announced the launch of our next testnet. So we're currently soliciting people for that. By the time this episode actually airs, it might be too late to join as a participant, but progress is quickly coming, trying to move closer and closer to launch, polish more things off, and say we're ready. Twitter, Sarai Dex, D-E-X. You can also find me on Twitter, at Kayaba, K-A-Y-A-B-A, Nerve. And yeah, I think that's the high points for where to find us.
All right, perfect. Well, yeah, thanks very much for chatting me. Man, I need to drink some water or something. I've been stumbling over some stuff. Thanks very much for chatting with me today, and I hope you have a great one.
Thanks for your time, and the invite. It was great to dip.
Yeah, absolutely.